You're listening to Allied Health Podcast, talking all things allied health with your hosts, Danielle Whedon, physiotherapist, and Claire Jones, occupational therapist.
In this episode of Allied Health Podcast, we're talking to Sarah Jones, professional practice advisor at OT Australia. For those of you who are not aware, OT Australia recently rolled out the Workforce Development Project that will deliver a plan focusing on the ways OT Australia can support occupational therapists both now and in the future. As occupational therapy recruitment specialists for the past 20 years, Danielle and myself have never experienced such high demand for OTs, both nationally and internationally. So we're excited to discuss with Sarah OT Australia's recent research into the OT workforce and its plans to support the profession.
Welcome to Allied Health Podcast, Sarah.
Hi, Claire and Danielle. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on, Sarah.
So Sarah, in a snapshot, what does the OT workforce look like at the moment? And have you got any information around current data and trends that you can share with us?
So the most recent ARPA data shows that there's over 29,000 OTs in Australia at the moment. 60% of the workforce is working full-time, so we do have a relatively large proportion of the workforce working part-time. And 92% of our workforce identifies female, so there's probably some element of family formation that's contributing to a large proportion of the workforce working part-time. The National Skills Commission predicted that there would be a 7.4% increase in the demand for OTs in Australia between 2021 to 2026, so the current period that we're in now, which they would consider to be a moderate growth rate. So alongside this, they've also predicted that the healthcare and social assistance industry will have the most growth across all industries in the country within that same period. So there's a lot of growth in this space. They don't actually provide the specific information behind those predictions, but we can make some assumptions based off other data that we have. So some of the things that may be contributing to the demand for OTs are things like our ageing population and increase in life expectancy, increase in mental health needs within the population, the introduction of the NDIS, high numbers of people living with chronic disease, and I think most excitingly for our profession is the increase in recognition and understanding of the work that OTs do. So there is really high demand for OTs across the country in all practice areas. And I think as people continue to recognise the impact that OTs can have, we will expect this demand to continue and not slow down anytime soon, which is really exciting for OTs.
I really like that last point, Sarah, the increased recognition and understanding of the work that OTs do. I guess, you know, being an OT myself, a bit of a magnet for it, but you just hear so much more discussion about occupational therapy these days and hear of so many more people having an understanding of the profession and the work that OTs do across the lifespan.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot more discussion around OT in the media. There's a lot of emerging areas of practice that OTs are now moving into, like women's health or OT in sexuality. There's a lot of work being done by OTs in pain management. So not only are we getting increased demand in the work we've traditionally been doing, we're also expanding out to other areas, which is really exciting as well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the introduction of the NDIS has contributed to the demand for OTs. And in terms of recruitment, you know, we've certainly seen a huge increase in demand for OTs over the last, say, 5 years as disability services have expanded. What insights can you share into the relatively recent growth in the disability sector?
So from the period that since the NDIS has been introduced, so from about 2013 to 2021, there was a nearly 9% increase in OTs working in the disability space and 6% increase in OTs working in paediatrics. So that's likely closely related to the increased funding available for those clients. Probably the biggest change we've seen is the distribution of the workforce over that period. So as a result of the NDIS being rolled out and reforms in other funding schemes sort of moving a similar direction, there has been enormous growth in the private sector in the employment of OTs. And we now have over 25% of OTs employed in the private sector, which was previously a minority employer for us. So that's a huge shift within the profession.
It's a massive shift, 25%.
Yeah. So it's close to employment in the public sector, which is sort of unheard of in the past. So it's a big change. We're also one of the fastest growing allied health professions. So there are more OTs around who can do the work, but we are still seeing just consistently high demand across the board.
Definitely an exciting time to be an OT. And as Claire mentioned, we hear day in, day out, the demand for OTs being so high. And with the demand for OTs being so high and retention of our existing OT workforce, extending to OT students, can you outline what OT Australia are doing to support the OT workforce?
Yeah, so we did invest in a large workforce development project. So that's looking at some of the current emerging opportunities for OTs, as well as some of the challenges facing the profession with such high demand and shortages in a lot of sectors. So we have completed our, I guess, investigations, which involved a huge amount of consultation with the profession, as well as a literature review and a data analysis. And as a result of that, in collaboration with the profession, we developed a workforce strategy, which outlines some actions OTA can take to support the growth, recruitment and retention within the workforce. So we are in the process of getting the workforce strategy ready to launch publicly, which is very exciting. So that should be released over the coming months to outline some of the actions we'll be taking. That project will work alongside some of our other strategies, such as our mental health strategy and aged care strategy, which provide some more targeted actions in those practice areas. Our advocacy team are also doing a huge amount of work at the moment in a lot of different practice areas, but particularly NDIS with the current NDIS review underway. So they're doing a lot of hard work advocating for the role of OTs in that space. And we do also provide a lot of support direct to members. So we've got a student webinar series happening that supports students in their transition to practice. We're developing resources for early career OTs. And we run events such as Hot Topics and member forums, which are sessions that are run on emerging areas or current topics of interest, just to support people who are within the workforce. So they're just a few examples. There is a lot more information on the OTA webpage, or we can be contacted for more information around what we're doing. For employers of OTs, there's also a lot of information delivered through the association that can assist your staff to work, I guess, at a high standard and stay across a lot of the industry developments that are happening at the moment.
And coming back to the workforce development project, what are the findings around what OTs are looking for in a role, Sarah?
So we found we surveyed over 2,000 OTs in all practice areas and across the whole country at all experience levels. And consistently we found that OTs are happier in their roles when they're offered really good supervision and support. So that was particularly true for early career therapists, but it was consistent across all experience levels. So that would include things like supervision that's with another OT and separate from line management, access to professional development, access to a professional network, and also good governance within the workplace, so policies and procedures that can support them in their work. Another big theme that emerged was the understanding of the OT role. So OTs were a lot happier in their role when the role was well understood by their workplace. So OTs can sometimes operate a little bit differently to other health and allied health professions and often have unique challenges. So it can be really helpful for workplaces to invest the time into understanding the OT role in order to best support their staff and ensure they're providing an environment where their staff can really thrive and enjoy their job. And OTs also develop their skills, I guess, in different areas and have different capabilities. So it's important to also understand the scope of practice that the OT that's employed is working within, as well as the broader OT role.
I guess, Sarah, I was just going to comment there that OT is so broad that there can be a very unrealistic expectation of, you know, what lies within an OT scope. So I really agree that it's so important to have that scope really well defined so that you don't have that sense of feeling really overwhelmed in terms of, you know, having such a broad scope of practice and an expectation that you have that knowledge around, you know, absolutely everything. That can be so overwhelming as a practitioner, can't it?
Exactly right. And it's a little bit like I sort of think of it the same as you might have a doctor, but they might be a dermatologist or might be a neurologist. There's so many different fields that doctors can work in, and it's very similar for OT. So one OT can't be expected to do everything, and they won't be able to do everything. They won't have the knowledge to do everything. So it's really important to understand what scope the OT is working in, where they've developed their skills and where they're looking to develop their skills to make sure that they're able to, I guess, enjoy their work and have the most impact with their clients.
And reduce stress levels. Isn't it?
Yeah.
You want your OT to be thriving, not surviving in the role.
Yes, particularly for early career OTs, it's really important to have discussions, you know, straight up to understand where they've developed their skills and where they still need quite a bit of support to develop their skills as well.
Yeah, we see it as well, Sarah. I know we've spoken a lot about the NDIS, but some of the NDIS roles with the broad scope of practice that OTs can be requested to cover is huge, as opposed to going into a pediatric private practice role where your scope of practice is a little bit more clearly defined, or going into a hospital role where you're going rotationally through, you know, an orthopedic ward for 6 months and then a neuro ward for 6 months. So the supervision support is absolute, apart from your findings to say that's what OTs are looking for, it is absolutely what our advice to any OT that we talk to, especially grads and early career therapists, is look for the supervision and support. It's imperative.
Definitely. And there are definitely OTs that can work in a more generalist way, but then there may be other, they may not take on, you know, complex or more specialised sort of clients. So you just need to have an understanding of the scope that they're working in. Probably one of the other big trends that we found was the culture within the organisation. So a vast majority of our survey respondents reported that they were primarily driven by making a difference in the lives of the people that they work with. So they felt that it was really important to work for someone who was able to manage and balance business priorities and KPIs with genuine interest in supporting clients and being able to have meaningful relationships and have good outcomes with clients.
Yeah, culture's so important, isn't it? It's it's a cultural fit. It's often hard to describe, and it's often a gut feeling too. But it's really critical to, you know, your ability to succeed in a role.
Definitely. We also have some OTs that enjoy doing like a day of shadowing with a potential employer in future to find out a little bit more about what it might be like working on the ground. And I know that gives you a tiny snapshot of a cultural fit, but it's absolutely very important. In terms of what OTs are looking for in the role, we obviously speak to OTs week in, week out. And obviously also in addition to what you've discussed, Sarah, it's important that OTs are fairly paid for a role and they've got good workplace entitlement. So that would include your base salary plus superannuation and travel and any other PD allowances. So in terms of what we're seeing in the OT workforce, we've got a good idea of market salaries. If anyone wants to give us a call, we can chat to you about what you should expect with your experience.
And we also see so many therapists wanting flexibility in work arrangements.
Yeah. So just a final question, which probably overlaps a little bit in what we just discussed, Sarah, specifically looking at early grad OTs, how can they best be supported to give them a confident and successful start to their career in occupational therapy, in your opinion?
So the graduates that I speak to, the number one thing that I would recommend that they look for in a new role is supervision and support. And ideally, that supervision for an early career therapist would be with another OT and separate from line management. So OTA does have a supervision guideline on our webpage as well that I guess provides some more detail around what good supervision looks like. I guess not to repeat myself too much, but understanding the capability and scope of practice that they're working within is really important. So I would recommend they look for a workplace who is really committed to helping them grow and develop their skills in the role and giving them a supported transition to practice, so they're not just thrown in the deep end and straight away given a huge caseload with high KPIs, and they're given the space to orientate themselves to the workplace, orientate themselves to practice, and starting at a level that matches their capability at that time. And sort of to go with that, some time for them to reflect and learn on their practice. They might have reduced KPIs initially, so they do have that time for reflection, for a bit of extra research, access to other therapists that they can ask for support, things like that. The other thing that a lot of therapists report being really helpful is to have just support and engagement from the broader profession to help them build their professional identity. So particularly in private roles where there may not be large teams that you would find in a public service or a hospital, it's really important that they are supported to actually go and seek those communities elsewhere if they're not working within a large team within their practice.
We definitely see, in speaking to grads in early career roles, we do see employers doing exactly what you've said. They're doing some graded KPIs around billable hours and really working up a graduate into a full caseload across a 6-month period and that sort of thing. So I would encourage any graduate or early career OT to be really clear about what that's going to look like for the first 6 to 12 months of their graduate role.
Yeah, definitely, and people graduate with different skills, even though people might have come from similar courses. They do have different placement experiences and things like that. So workplaces do need to sort of work with the graduate to understand where they're at and what support they need to be successful in the role as well.
That's a really valid point, Sarah. It really, the OT you are that, you know, when you graduate, without putting any pressure on clinical placements, but there's variability in grads in terms of what they know, purely based on the fact that everyone does, you know, takes on different clinical placements and will pick up a different skill set from those clinical placements. So that's really important for employers to tune into that and work out, you know, where they need to start with their grads in terms of, you know, support, education, professional development.
Definitely. And the demand from workplaces will differ as well.
Yeah.
And the work that they're expecting the graduates to do. So,
yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Sarah. It's been great to hear more about OT Australia's Workforce Development Project. I see a lot about it on LinkedIn. It's really interesting to click on those articles and see what's happening there. You know, it's really, really important research, you know, in highlighting, you know, the need to not only grow the number of therapists in the profession, but, you know, most importantly, to support the existing, you know, highly skilled and extremely valuable OT workforce. So thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Allied Health podcast. In the show's notes, you'll find links to our free recruitment resources, job opportunities, and healthcare marketplace insights. To listen to new episodes, please subscribe via Apple, Google, or wherever you find your favourite podcasts. And if you've enjoyed the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to tell your therapy colleagues and friends to tune in.